Shiochal basar, you have to eat meat. V'yatakin sirdanaya, and you should prepare a beautiful meal. Shota yayin achi shtakir v'yaradem mishachrot. You drink wine until you fall asleep. The Rambam's position is not to get drunk. Of course, most positions take Chazal literally. And if you're interested in hearing a little conversation about why we get drunk on Purim, what the dangers are, what the pros are, I spoke to the boys about it this morning, so it's online. You can listen to it. It's important because I think Americans especially have a hard time understanding why people here drink more than they drink in America and what culture you come from. Culture here is different. So you got to not overlay your own culture, but realize that it's a little bit different here than it is in America. Anyway, but getting back to the Rambam, within the same halacha describing the mitzvah of the Seuda, the Rambam writes, V'chein chayiv adam lishloach shtei manot shel basar o shnei minei tavshil o shnei minei ochlin. So there are two very, very intriguing parts of this Rambam. One is that he includes the mitzvah of mishloach manos within the halacha which describes Seuda. Two, in case that classification isn't enough, he bridges them with the word v'chein. He is describing the Seuda, meat, wine, festivity. V'chein, a subset of the Seuda, is Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reihu. So it seems from the Rambam that Mishloach Manos is not a separate mitzvah. But what is Mishloach Manos? Can anyone give me a different definition? It's not a separate mitzvah of Purim. It's what? Part of what? Seuda. Part of the Seuda on Purim is to share it with people, symbolically. So I take some food from my meal and I share it with other people. But it's not a standalone mitzvah, it's a Seuda-based mitzvah. It's a manner of experiencing Seuda in a communal fashion, in a joint fashion, rather than a personal, self-absorbed fashion. So the same halacha, it's bridged by the word v'chein, that gives us a different categorical definition. When I say the word categories, it's a whole different category. It's not just, it's a category. It's not a separate mitzvah. Matanos Levyonim has nothing to do with the Seuda. Mishloach Manos does. Mikra Megillah has nothing to do with the Seuda, other than it's the same day. Mishloach Manos does. Let's see which other Rishonim, without saying it, say it. This is why it's a classic Lamdash Sugya. Which Rishonim, by the way, the halachos and the applications may reflect the fact that it's not a separate autonomous mitzvah, but it's part of the Seuda. So let's first inspect the timing of the mitzvah. When should you have your Purim Seuda? Well, that's a layup, that's a no-brainer on Purim, right? But Purim's a very, very slippery day because it's not always one day. In fact, who knows how the first Mishnah in Maseches Megillah begins? Anyone know? Megillah Negres, Yud, Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav. So the Megillah could be read days before Purim. For example, the villagers would read on the Monday or Thursday before Purim. So if Purim came out on Sunday, then the villagers would read on, not 10, but 11. 11 was the earliest day. Read on Thursday. So when these villagers are reading early, because those are the only days they went into town for shopping and to provide produce, so they were allowed this dispensation to read early. So if Purim's on Sunday, but they're reading on Thursday before, when should they conduct a Seudas Purim? And the plot thickens because the mitzvahs get distributed in an uneven fashion. You think, well, I'll just read the Megillah a little bit early. Everything else is Purim on Sunday. Not true. If you read the Megillah on Thursday, you also give tzedakah, Matanot Levyonim on Thursday, because the Aniyim are so excited the whole year. Matanot Levyonim would be taunting them to read the Megillah as they wait a couple days. I mean, literally people will call me. I collect in the yeshiva. By the way, just be careful. You're all chayiv in the mitzvah. So maybe I should be a little bit more assertive. Because I know that about 15 years ago, I noticed in an Alon Shvut, there just weren't any of them hanging around. People just didn't come. So the boys would go have their Seuda, have the parade, jump around, have a great time, get drunk, eat, and then go to sleep. And the day was over and they missed the mitzvah, 25% of the day. So now I collect, actually, about a week before, I go around with a little packet and I collect and I distribute. Then I need them come to my door and I give it to them every year. So I'm wondering if maybe I should work it out here that someone collects and give it to... Oh, great, okay,
that's,
so it's done already.
That's
okay.
One of the reasons why you're selling, so then we're like, this hoop we're giving Sedaka, you get...
Okay, cool, okay, so then you're doing it already. Anyway, so Matanot Levyonim, the Aniyim are waiting the whole year, You have to give it out and distribute it on Thursday. What about Mishloach Manos? When should that be conducted? One a day in which Purim split for the villagers. So that's the halacha, but why? So let's see the Ran. The Ran, which is the source right under the Rambam, says as follows. He says, the Afalpi, the second to last line in the Ran, Shemakdimim Likros, that you pre-schedule the Kriya to help out the villagers, Nosnim Matanos Levyonim Biyom Kriyatam, and you also pre-schedule the Matanos Levyonim for the early reading, Einam Sholchim Manos, but you do not deliver Mishloach Manos on Thursday. You think maybe structurally it's like Matanos Levyonim. If you're giving the money to Aniyim on Thursday before Sunday, perhaps distribute Mishloach Manos. It's like a type of tzedakah. So the Ran says no. Shani Hasam, five words. Delo Avdi Seuda. Because you're not conducting a Seuda on Thursday. The Seuda is pinned to the actual day. There's no reason to pre-schedule the Seuda. If Purim's on Sunday, that's the 14th, then even villagers can conduct the Seuda on Sunday. They have to pre-schedule the Megillah and pre-schedule the Matanot Levyonim. There's no purpose to rescheduling the Seuda. And if the Seuda's on Sunday, the 14th, then so is the Mishloach Manos, because the Mishloach Manos has to be on the same day as the Seuda. You can't sever the two. You can't detach the two. If the Seuda's on Sunday, Mishloach Manos is also on Sunday. Because evidently the Ran agrees with the Rambam. Then Mishloach Manos is not a separate mitzvah, maybe structurally similar to a Matanot Levyonim. It's part of the Seuda. It's extending your Seuda. So it has to be scheduled on the same day you're conducting a Seuda, even though some of the other mitzvahs migrate back to Thursday. You've got the Mikra Megillah migrating back to Thursday. You've got Matanos of Yonim following the Megillah, but not Mishloach Manos. That's tied, that's fastened to the Seuda. Because you can't separate the two time-wise. Okay, what about Shabbos? Anyone know what happens when Purim falls on Shabbos in Yerushalayim? What do we call that? Purim Shulash. Because it's a three-day Purim. What are the 3 days? You want to live in Yerushalayim? What? Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. Right? So what do they do each day? But when do you read the Megillah? Sunday is the 16th. So?
Sunday's the
Uber. Right?
And?
Shabbos?
Megillah.
No. Shabbos is Alei Nisim. The regular day. Megillah is the day early. Okay? So we don't have a Seuda on Shabbos. Seuda's on Sunday. Seuda's on Sunday, pretty simple. Mishloach Manos on Sunday as well. Now it's an interesting reason. Why don't we have a Seuda of Purim on Shabbos? So the Yishalmi, just out of interest, that I cited source number 3, quotes the following question. Boy, Reb Zeira, Ba Kumi Reb Yavo. 2 lines in the bottom. The Yasul son b'Shabbos. Why not schedule the Seuda on Shabbos? It's a big deal. Megillah is mukzah on Shabbos. You may carry the Megillah. Same shofar problem. Lulav problem. Matanot of Yonim, of course, not on Shabbos. But have the Seuda on Shabbos. Make it a 2-day Yom Tov, 2-day Purim, or even a 3-day Purim. So he says that the pasuk that obligates us to have a mishdeh says, La'asol osam yimei mishdeh v'simcha, to convert the day into mishdeh v'simcha. Look at the last line of the Yishalmi. Et she'simchato tulia bebeitin. You can only schedule a Purim Seuda on a day that based in the sides will be a day of Purim. Namely, when based in the sides is the new month and 14 days later is Purim. So based in essentially determining that Wednesday will be a Purim day or Thursday will be a Purim day or Sunday. But Shabbos is already a day of Simcha. Even without based in making any decision. Every seventh day since the time of creation is Shabbos. And every seventh day of Shabbos is a day of Simcha. So Purim has to be a day of converting a regular day into a day of Simcha. Not of selecting a day that's already slated for Simcha and doubling up on the Simcha. So that's why the Shami rules, you don't conduct a Seuda on Shabbos. By the way, girls, this is an extremely, extremely intriguing Yishalmi. Listen carefully. I want to shatter some of the misconceptions. Simple pashtus, there is no din of Simcha on Shabbos. Al pi halacha, there is no din of Simcha on Shabbos. There is a din of Oneg on Shabbos, and they're very different. Simcha you're chayav on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov you're allowed to fast. The person says that for me, my happiness spiritually is fasting. You are allowed to fast on Yom Tov. There are 5, 8 girls sitting in this room. I can guarantee you, at least half of your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother's fasted on Rosh Hashanah. Fasting on Rosh Hashanah was a very, very popular minhag. If you want to fast on Sukkot, it's because you're overwhelmed with the spirituality of the Sukkah. Well, Sukkot's maybe not, but Shavuos, for sure, you're allowed to fast. You don't have to eat the Sukkah, you don't have a Chiyav Matzah. Shabbos, you're not allowed to fast. Shabbos is oneg. Oneg is physical. Shabbos, you have to eat. It's usher to fast on Shabbos. The person, Rahman al-Islam, becomes an Avel. And then there's a Yom Tov. The Avelus ends. Because Avelus is a day of mourning of Avelus. And Yom Tov is a day of Simcha. And the Simcha of Yom Tov disrupts the Avelus. If a person loses a relative, and then Sukkot comes, or Pesach comes, or that's it, you're finished. Shabbos, of course, doesn't break Avelus. You halt certain activities, but you resume your Avelus after Shabbos, because Shabbos is not a day of Simcha. There is no Simcha on Shabbos. We don't say Mekadesh Yisra. We don't say Samcheinu b'mitzvah secha v'kadshenu. We say Sabeinu mitu v'echa v'sam Senechokeinu b'ser secha. There is no Simcha on Shabbos. This Yishalmi makes it sound otherwise. This Yishalmi says you can't conduct a Purim Seder on Shabbos because you have to convert Purim into Simcha, and Shabbos is already a day of Simcha. So sometimes someone stops you on the street and says, disprove the common convention that there's no Simcha on Shabbos. Oh, it's Yishalmi Megillah. I learned it during the Shir of Shlach Manas. But there are many who disagree with Yishalmi. We personally disagree with Yishalmi, and people in Yishalayim don't conduct their Suda on Purim Shabbos. But there are those who disagree with Yishalmi. One of the people who disagreed with Yishalmi was a 16th century rabbi called the Maharil Chaviv. Yosef Ibn Chaviv, who lived in Yishalayim, and he said, why not just have the Suda on Shabbos? What's the big deal? Just have a Suda Shabbos, Suda Purim. So he conducted when Shabbos fell in Yerushalayim. Shabbos never falls. Purim never falls on Shabbos for non-Yerushalayim. 14 never falls on Shabbos, but 15 sometimes falls on Shabbos, so our calendar works out. So we can never have a Purim on Shabbos, but Yerushalayim people can. So he lived in Yerushalayim in the 16th century, and Purim fell on Shabbos, and he had a Sirdo on Shabbos. He passed in against the Shulchan Aruch, against the Yishalmi. And he said, by the way, guess what? If Purim falls on Shabbos and you're conducting the Suda on Shabbos, what other mitzvah should you perform on Shabbos? Shlach Manos. So he gave him Shlach Manos on Shabbos. And there were no Erevs in those days, so he gave it to his neighbor or to his guests. Let's read the Magen Avram. Magen Avram is late 16th century, early 17th. Magen Avram on the top left, front page. Ve'in osim Sudas Purim. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins like Yishalmi. You don't conduct the Sudas Purim on Shabbos if Purim's Chal. Viral Chaviv, it's Maral Chaviv, Herech B'Rayos, developed a lot of Rayos, Shehasudahi B'Shabbos, V'yasa Kein Maisa B'Yushalayim, he actually conducted a Suda in his own life in Yushalayim, V'gam Mishloach Manos B'Shabbos, and he also sent Manos on Shabbos, Ki HaManos Heim Mehasuda. Holds like the Rambam, holds like the Ran, timing again, timing, timing, timing. You may pre-schedule certain parts of the Megillah if you live in a village, but not Mishloach Manos. It has to be fastened to the Suda. You may switch around certain parts that you don't perform on Shabbos, but if you perform a Suda on Shabbos, then you perform Mishloach Manos on Shabbos as well. According to the Shulchan Aruch, you perform both on Sunday. There's no reason not to. A third manifestation of timing. A lot of questions. What happens if you won't see your friend during the day? That friend's going to disappear. Can you give that friend Mishloach Manos at night? Now let me clarify what I mean by Mishloach Manos. You're chayav to give one Mishloach Manos. We give a lot to our friends, potatoes, popcorn, potato chips, pretzels, candy, soda, whatever. But you're really chayav in one Mishloach Manos. And the truth is, if you really want to be a kind of mitzvah the proper way, and we'll talk about this in a moment, your one Mishloach Manos that you're chayav should try to give in a very special way. Well, maybe I won't ruin the surprise. In a few minutes, we'll talk about it. But can that one Mishloach Manos be at night? Obviously, your friend, you can see your friend. Of course, you give her something. And then the next day, you... But can you... Let's say you're in one Mishloach Manos. Can it be at night? So the Ramah, in the little cloud here, bottom middle, the Ramah says, V'yesh l'shloach manos bayom v'lo balayla. Why during the day? You read the Megillah at night. Why is Mishloach Manos only during the day? So the Vilna Gaon, who I didn't copy here, says, because the Suda has to be during the day. How do you know the Suda has to be during the day? What's the Pasuk? L'asos osam? Yemei Mishneh Simcha. That's why drinking at night, meaningless. There's no purpose. If I had the right, I would ban drinking at night nationwide. Serves no purpose. Okay, you get into the spirit a little bit. There's no mitzvah to drink at night. Drinking the night of Purim is like drinking tonight. Okay, contributes to the festive mood. During the day, there's a mitzvah, part of the Mishnah, part of the Suda. So since the Suda is limited to the day, similarly, the Mishloach Manos are limited to the day because they have to be an extension of the Suda. So these are three different timing issues that all reflect the Rambam. Number one, villagers. You do a lot early, but not Mishloach Manos. That's the day of with the Suda. Yerushalayim people. Okay, most people paskin like the Shulchan Aruch. But let's say you were to paskin not like the Shulchan Aruch. You'd actually conduct the Suda on Shabbos. Would you also deliver Mishloach Manos despite the obvious logistical difference? Yes. Third of all, day, not night. Okay. What about content? What about methodology? How you make the mitzvah? Again, no brainers. Well, the Gemara very often describes not just the mitzvah in abstract, but how Chazal were making the mitzvah. And in this instance, the Gemara Megillah cites two different examples, two different extremes. It cites two very poor members of Chazal, how they were making the mitzvah, and two very wealthy members of Chazal, how they were making the mitzvah. Let's first start with the impoverished people. If you take a look at page number two, okay, turn over the page. Page number two, where is my, move this here. Page number two, on the top right, the end of the first column, right, the top right, the upside down part, okay, hold your page like this, hypnotizing, hold your page like this, top right, end of the first section, Abaye bar Avin, Rabbi Chanina bar Avin. These were two brothers, Abaye and Rabbi Chanina, the sons of Avin. They're very poor. Michalfi sudasayu lahadadi. They swapped meals. They literally couldn't afford to purchase more food. So the simple reading of this Gemara is they swapped meals. Abaye took his meal, gave it to his brother Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina took his meal, gave it to Abaye. They each had food to eat, and they swapped their meals in the mitzvah. The problem is, if that were the scenario, why would the Gemara bother telling this to us? There's no chiddush there. Of course, I can swap my meal with you. So Rashi has a different interpretation of what this Gemara's message is. Not swapping meals, but swapping invitations. Not saving money this year, but saving money macroeconomically. Two-year plan. Says, you know, Abaye told Rabbi Chanina, this year come eat with me. And Rabbi Chanina said, okay, next year you'll come eat with me. This way, long-term, we'll save our money. Rashi? Right underneath, Mechalfi Sidusayu, Ze Ochel Im Ze Bepurim Shalshana Zu, Uvishaniya Sa'id Chavarima. 1 year Abaye off invited Rabbi Chanina. 1 year Rabbi Chanina invited Abaye. See Rashi, right on the Gemara here. Okay. Okay. Oh, wait a second.
No, it's right here.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And wait a second. What can we infer from this Rashi? Abaye invited Rabbi Chanina. The year that Rabbi Chanina was a guest, how was he Mekayim Mishloach Manos? It sounds like, well, first give me the implication and then the explanation. It sounds like if you're a guest, come on, don't be afraid. If you're a guest at someone's meal, you're not making your own meal. Well, that's a nice thing to do. But if you're a guest, no. Say it even stronger. You're not making a meal. You're a pater from Mishloach Manos. Because the chiyuv of Mishloach Manos is an extension of your meal. When you make a meal, you have to share it. What if I'm not making a meal that year? That's what the Magen Avraham deduces from this Rashi. I didn't quote it for you, but the Magen Avraham paskins halacha lemaisa. He says you should be machmir. But that's what Rashi says. So all of a sudden, we've got a pretty cool team here of people agreeing with the Rambam. It's the Ran about the villagers, and it's the Maral Chaviv about Yerushalayim, and it's the Ramah about the day, and all of a sudden, it's Rashi who interprets the Gemara to mean, it's not the only way to read the Gemara, but Rashi interprets the Gemara to mean that guests at meals aren't chayiv Mishloach Manos. Why in your right mind would a guest be pater from Mishloach Manos for an autonomous mitzvah. If it's an extension of a meal, what, you're not making a meal, you're not chayav to extend it. So all of a sudden, we've talked about the category of timing, now we talked about the category of how, or who. What about what, content? What has to be in Mishloach Manos? The very famous sefer called Trumas Hadeshen. Has anyone ever heard of the sefer? Roughly the end of the 15th century, student of Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Yisrael Israelain, questions, secret ghost questions. In those days, you couldn't get money to pay for svarim to be printed unless they were shaylos v'tshuvos svarim. Printing svarim was a very, very expensive proposition, very expensive. It had to be subsidized. People didn't want to subsidize another parish on shas. They wanted to subsidize halacha questions. So Rabbeinu Yisrael Isserlein said, Isserlein said, wait a second, I want to publish my sefer. So he scripted questions to himself. Said, by the way, what do you think the pshat in Bava Metzia Daf Beis is? Oh, I'm happy you asked. It wasn't that transparent, but so in a question that someone asked him, in a question that someone asked the Truma Sadesh, and he wanted to know Sheila on the bottom of that second page. Bnei Adam Hasholchim LeChavareim BePurim Chalukim V'Stinim. Let's say instead of sending food, you want to give an iPhone 10. Well, that's a pretty cool Mishloach Manos. I'd like one of those Mishloach Manos. Not iPhone, but opposed to Apple, fundamentally, but nice Samsung. Let's say you want to, I don't know, deliver some really nice gift, a Sefer, a juicy Sefer. Is it limited to food? Can you give clothing? Right. Remember, I gave this shiur. Oh, your bonus one, probably 20 plus years ago, 2019. Like 23, 4 years ago, in a Sephardi shul in Brooklyn. I was there performing this, and give a shiur. I gave the shiur. And a lot of the people there in the shul were into jeans and selling clothing. And so I had this whole rooting session. Come on, Rabbi, say yes, we'll get a lot of business. Like Ashkenazim, very different from Sephardim. Ashkenazim sit there and listen like little sheep. Sephardim is like a peanut gallery. Everyone's talking, screaming, back and forth. Total different experience. I got to shut my phone. Total different experience. Yeah, Rabbi, say yes, perfume. Like, got all, stop trying to share and shop their wares. I say, guys, I got bad news for you. The answer is no.
If it's part of your seudah, why wouldn't it just be your leftovers?
That's, okay, we'll see that later. But at least symbolically, it has to be food. So tshuva, he says, Yira de'en yotzim bahem. And not yotze with clothing, which could be exorbitantly priced. It could be 30, 40 times more than whatever little popcorn you're sending. D'nira tam de'mishloach manos k'dei she'e l'kol achad dai v'sibruk l'kayim nesudah. Everyone, it's basically enabling people to eat their seudah. I give you clothing, I give you sheets, I'm not going to help you with your suda. Rambam. This is what makes it such a classically lamdash sugi, because you've got Rishonim talking about totally different things, but they're all talking about the same thing. He's talking about what you send, and he's talking about when you send it, and he's talking about if you're a guest, but it's all the same logic of the Rambam. It's part of the suda. But what about not just that it should be food? What about what type of food? So the Be'er Heiteb, which is a repository of different akronim, back on page number one, quotes the Maharil. Maharil was a German, a 15th century German rabbi. Maharil says, on the bottom of the first page, the bottom right, Be'er Heiteb, Mevushal Haroi Lachila. There are two requirements for Mishloach Manos. They have to be Roi Lachila. Everyone knows that one. Now here, right on this page. We Roi Lachila, right here. Can't be bag of tea. Can't be frozen chicken. Can't be some flour. But you may not be aware of what he also says. Right here on the bottom, he says, Mevushal Haray Lachila. Food has to be cooked. Now, a lot of people don't know about this chumrah. I'm machmir on this. We give all the popcorn and cookies and jellies and whatever else out, but one Mishloach Manos is normally an ani that comes in my door, but not only. I give a piece of chicken, some kugel, some spaghetti, whatever we have lying around, processed food. And we get people who will give a roll and some soup or some. Every year we know there are people who makpid on the mitzvah. Remember when, what?
Baked.
Small. Remember when we were in yeshiva, we didn't have access to kitchens, so we'd go to the makolet, buy a roll, baked, buy some salami, smoke, whatever processed, then put it together and give each other mishlach manos. So we took it really seriously, and we still for this day take it seriously. And I know the families who every year, they're the ones who send the soup or the bread or the chicken and the schnitzel or something, just to be behind the mitzvah. And why would you need processed food, a mana? Because again, you're sharing your meal. People eat cooked food. If you want to sit down to apples and oranges and vegetables and milk, they're preparing food. So this chumrah to have a mana. If you're interested, the same chumrah applies to Erev Tavshilin. Erev Tavshilin is a symbolic way of starting to cook for Shabbos before Yantiv. If Yantiv backs up Shabbos, if you have Yantiv for B'nai Chutzlar, it's B'nai Chutzlar, it's Thursday, Friday, then you've got Shabbos. You can't really cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos unless you already started to cook for Shabbos on Wednesday. So you take an egg, take some bread, make an Erev Tavshilin, you've already started to cook for Shabbos. It has to be a meal, therefore it has to be prepared for, not apples and oranges. So this is not just food, but what type of food. And someone was saying this before, I forget whom, maybe a certain level of food. We read about the poor people. Let's read about the rich people, how they tried to be mekayim the mitzvah. So it's back on this upside down page, top left, the first section, top of the first section. Yehuda Nesia. It's that second line, it's a little cut off. Yehuda Nesia, you see it? Right here, upside down, Mishnech Hasad or Marvin Mesimcha. Just turn the page over, don't turn your head. Right here, second line. A little confusing. Okay, Migdalos girls, shouldn't be so confused. Come on. Vida Nasiya, Shandra Levi Reboshia. Vihirda Nasi, very wealthy person. Send Reboshia. Itma Deigla Tilsa. Ready to lick your chops? The third offspring of a sheep. Everyone knows that's the juiciest meat. Not the first, not the second, but the third. If you're the third child in the family, wear it with pride. The juiciest. Maybe TMI there, right? For the cannibals. Okay. Juiciest is the third sheep. He sent them a whole lamb. Entire lamb. Lamb chops. Imagine sitting there, waiters carrying the lamb chops. But not only that, the garba de chamra. Big vat of wine. Can't beat that. This isn't the shalach manos of your grandmother, the little crumbling hamantashen, soggy popcorn. This is major league. This is front line. Now, it's not clear what Reboshia said back to him. Different girsos. But according to one girsa, he says to him, and it's, again, we just had one girsa in the Gemara, he says, you read that, Nasi? I'll take it from Matanas Levyon, because I'm not as wealthy as you. So I'll take the lamb and the wine from Matanas Levyon because it's value. But then it's making you money or value. But Mishloach Manos, you got to start again. It's not good enough. Good enough? I'm giving you lamb chops. Vintage wine. What could be? Why is it insufficient? So the Ritva says, I'll read it together, because Yerboshia turns to Yehuda HaNasi and says, because you're not eating lamb chops today. You're eating beef medallion cubes. Chateaubriand. You're eating better meat. I don't just want good meat. I want the meat that you're eating, or at least your level. You're not drinking some Moscato. You're drinking fancy schmancy pants wine. Send over some of that. Namely, for Mishloach Manos, at least according to the Ritva's way of reading the Gemara, you have to send your level. Why would you have to send your level, the deliverer's level, not just some objective level? Perhaps because of the same issue. You have to extend your meal. So I'm eating grade A food, and I send grade A minus food. I don't have to send my meal. I'll take the food from my cholent pot. Send food that I'd be eating today. It's not my meal. I don't eat it. Look at the Ritva. There's a fancy little amoeba there on the left. You write line number 7. Kiyamta banu rabbeinu matanas levyonim. Line number 6 or 7. Beginning of the line, Reboshia says, okay, I'll take the lamb chops and the wine at Matanos Levyonim, but not Nishloach Manas Perish, Shelo Haisa Yakara Hatashura Be'inav. It's not a good enough gift. Sheina Matana Le'adam Kamo. It doesn't represent your caliber, Rabbi Danasi. Velo Yatsi De'echobas Mishloach Manas Ishla Re'eo, and you're not Mekayim the Mitzvah. That's a big chiddush. We don't pass like this. But the fact that Rabbi Yehoshua did, at least according to the Ritva's Girsa, may indicate. So that's a pretty impressive team we've built. Rambam, Ran about the villagers, Bariel Chaviv about Shabbos, the Rama about day, the Rashi, that if you're a guest, you're pater, the Trumas Hadeshen, that you have to give food, not clothing, the Maharil, has to be cooked, not regular, the Ritva, has to be at your level. You don't have to accept all the Shitas, but you see how one logical concept can splinter off to many different manifestations, and you're all holding the same thing. Of the Rambam, it's V'chein Chayiv Adam L'Shloach Ne'emanos. Let me just conclude this part of the shiur. Remember we talked about the two poor brothers, Abayu and Chanina, and the brother who was a guest being pater from Mishloach Manos, and that's a big chiddush. But it's really a double chiddush, and it's a consistent double chiddush. Okay, we know the guest is pater, he's not making a meal. What about the host? You're not sending anything. How is the host being Mekayim by inviting? Isn't there a mitzvah to send something? The answer is no. Go on, fill it in. The mitzvah to send is only a symbolic way of including people in your meal. What's a better way than sending? Having them at your meal. If there's some autonomous mitzvah to deliver food to someone's doorstep, then I've got to actually take the food and deliver it. But if the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is just a symbolic way of getting into my meal, so if I get you into my meal, I'm pater.
Or anyone presents it as four mitzvahs.
Right, it's really three. Right. Now again, we don't paschal like this, and if you're making a meal, don't be so mechel on this. If making a meal, still send someone some food, and if you're a guest, still bring something, not just for the host, it could be Mishloach Manos, but just be mekayim the mitzvah. But these are seven or eight nafkaminos to this point that Mishloach Manos is not an autonomous delivery structurally similar to Matanos Avionim, but it's part of the Suda. Okay? We'll take a 30-second break, hydration, and then we'll learn a little bit about how to party.
And now not the party. But the party might stay.
Okay, let us talk a little bit about Megillas Esther very briefly. Last week we spoke about, I think I misspoke, did I tell you there were 10 letters? There really were, of course, 5 letters. But, what?
How many parties are
there? 10 parties.
You
only found 8. So let's review the 10 parties. Party number 1.
The first one.
Party number 2. The 2 parties of Shushan, right? The parties of Chalav and Nisim B'Shushan, 180 days, Muhammadina Samach Hashverosh, and Vashti's party. So in the first part, there are 3 parties. Okay, then the 4th party is?
For Esther, for she's.
When Esther is appointed. Very good. Party number 4. Party number 5. So this is in Perek Dalet. So now we've got 5 parties of tragedy, or 5 parties setting up the tragedy. 5 parties before it goes bleak. Then how many parties are there after the redemption? Well, there are 2 parties of Esther for the setup, to set Haman up. And then there's a party when the decree is issued that the Jews can defend themselves, when it all turns around. And then there are 2 parties in Perek Tes. The party of Tesvav for the people who fought on Yudalit, and the party on Tezayin for the people that part. I'm sorry, the party on Yudalit for the people that fought on Yudgimel, and the party on Tezvav for the people that fought on Yudalit. So the 10 parties, and they're evenly split. So why is that such an important literary trophy? What do parties have to do with Megillas Esther? Why so many parties? So to get this and to understand this, you have to first get a better sense of Megillas Esther. Okay. One thing is clear about this society. This society seems very, very liberal. Very, very pluralistic. Very, very multi-ethnic. Everyone's got their needs served. Mehodru v'etkush, sheva v'yasim me'am medina ha'melech ha'chashverosh. And the parties reflect the multiculturalism of Shushan. So if you take a look at Perek Aleph, we'll just focus on this party when there are people attending from different cultures. So there's a lot of variety because you got people walking in turbans, people walking in bare shirted, you got people walking in with lion. I mean, they're all from all over the place, different foods, different styles. So L'chol Ha'aminim Nitzayim B'Shushan HaBira, first of all, it's not just for noblemen, but there is a party for everyone in Shushan HaBira, Shivat Yamim, 7 days, and then 180 days for the other party. Line number three, B'Chatzar, Ginas, this is source number one, Bisan HaMelech. Different locations. Some people like eating in the courtyard. Some people like eating in the bitan, which is something like a bayis. Some people like eating in the gina, in the garden. So there's different varieties. Some people like kesef. Some people like zav. Some people like tcheles. Pasuk zayin, v'hashkos, bechlei zahav, v'kelim, mikelim shonim. Some people like drinking out of goblets. Some people like drinking out of skins, out of canteens, out of flasks. Out of people are coming from very, very different backgrounds, and all their eating habits are being accommodated. Source number two, turn the page, please. We'll see Chazal's amplification of everything we've seen. Source number two, first part Dalet, it's a Medrash. Vashtia Chadas Ein Ones, two Dalet. Kadas Kol Makom Makom. Everyone had whatever food and style and dietary approaches they were accustomed to. Look at Source Dalet. Atar Dibay Megum Abasar Kein Shasi. Some people came from places where they would first eat and then drink. The is atar deshasi ubasar kein megam. Some people drank and then they eat. Kol uma v'uma. Everyone's invited on their own terms. This is the new age. We're not racists. We don't profile people. Everyone's equal. We're not going to force any cultural mores down anyone's throat. You want to sit in the chatzer? Sit in the chatzer. Bitan? Sit in the bitan. You want gold? You have gold. You want drinks first? Drinks first. Food first? First first. Source number two. Bechatzar ginas bisan amelech. Chad amar. Haroi lechatzar lechatzar. Some people chose lechatzar. Haroi legina gina. Haroi lebisan bisan. Vashtia chadas eino nes. What does it mean chadas? The end of source number base. We're in Megillah. Amr Belazar, last line, two bays. Not only do they accommodate differences, they actually try to promote them. We're going to ship in wine from your home country. We're going to get some kosher wine from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll ship in wine from the craziest, most... We'll get it for you, if that's your wine. This is a really democratic society. And at the top of this democratic society is the icon of democracy, Achashverosh. Because Achashverosh didn't really have aristocratic background. In fact, he was a stable hand who ran away with Vashti, and Vashti was the descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, so he rose to glory because he married up and he married into the right family. Take a look at source number Vav, 2 Vav on the next page. Rav says he was called Achashverosh. Somehow Rav interprets the word Achashverosh. Shemalach me'atzma. He ascended independently. It's unimaginable in the ancient period to ascend the throne when you don't have the bloodlines, and Achashverosh is able to. So, all of a sudden, just make sure I've got my sheets in line here, all of a sudden you've got this very, very, give me a second here, it flew away when I was coming here. So all of a sudden, you've got this free-willing liberal society. What happens in a liberal society which accepts everyone on their own terms? No racism, no bigotry, no force-feeding cultural mores. You see, part of culture is not just meant to exclude, but to create values around which people rally. That's what you have in today's world. You've got the Trumpian backlash to the globalism and the multiculturalism and the lack of any values and any cultural fraternity because it's nothing we stand for because our country is overrun by foreigners and no one has any common ideas. So there's a very, very strong backlash. And the challenge for humanity is to find that middle ground. find a middle ground where there is a culture that you gather around food, religion, family, language, common past, but it becomes embracing to others. And humanity's struggling with that right now. Humanity hasn't really gotten it right. You've got multiculturalists, hyper-pluralists who abdicate any sense of personal identity and what their country stands for, and you've got these hyper-nationalists who are bigoted and exclusionary to others. And how do you find that space? We create, I think in Israel we're doing a pretty good job with, there's a common culture that we all agree with, and we're trying to be, under the military conditions we're facing, trying to be as open as we can, as many cultures as we can. But in a culture in which there's an absolute erosion of any common value, because everyone is arriving from different backgrounds, different cultures, different regions, what's the one universal culture? What's the one universal color? It's green if you're in America. It's called money. Money's a universal language. It doesn't make a difference where you come from. Everyone wants money. Everyone loves money. And therefore the opulence and the ostentatiousness and the voyeurism of these meals. Because everyone can gather around the gold. Everyone understands what wealth is. And that's why Haman is paying for his genocide. Because this is a city in which money speaks. Remember I told you that Achashverosh was called Achashverosh because he reigned independently? Well, let's take a look how Rabbi Chanina says Achashverosh. Source number Vav, 2 Vav on the second page. He says, Rabbi Chanina Amar, top of the page, Shehakol Nase Russian Biyamav. There was so much taxation. How do you think 180 days of partying took place? Where did they get the food? Where did they get the wine? Where did they get the alabaster? Where did they get the gold? Because they were taxing the villagers across the globe through the nose. So the aristocrats could lie on couches and spread themselves prone for 180 days, orgying on food and women. While poor, average working class people being taxed through the nose. Achashverosh is a tax mogul. And you see it, of course, in the end of the Megillah Esther, where he reinstalls taxation. Back to order, back to business. We'll see, of course, more taxation. Tax is a little bit relieved, and the tax burden is relieved a little bit. So on the one hand, you've got celebration of money and wealth. Now, a culture which celebrates money and wealth, at a certain point, it's going to shift into a culture not just of acquiring wealth, but of displaying wealth. And that's the shift from culture of greed into a culture of ostentation and a culture of exhibitionism. It becomes less about what you have and what you can flaunt. Remember, in the early 2000s, there was a terrible, terrible scandal in Houston. Houston was a hub for energy companies. It was called the Enron scandal. And you had a lot of scams and scandals and people skimming money off of. And these corporate execs went to jail for years, 20, 30 years in jail. They weren't young people. I remember them being interviewed on the news shows, and they said, you had $50 million, you had $200 million. Who cared about the other $300? You had all the money you'd ever need. The money your children would ever need, all the money your grandchildren would ever need, now because you needed to skim 200 mil, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your adult life. And I said, yeah, but it didn't make a difference how much we had because we had to keep up with other people. We were competing. It wasn't about the money anymore. It was about the competition. It was about the rivalry. It was about flexing our muscles and flaunting our ego. So you go very quickly from a community of wealth into a community of opulence and Bahar Oso. That's a painful word, Bahar Oso. First parak, line number 1 Aleph. Bahar Oso is Osher, Kivod Malchuso, the Es Yikar, Tiferes Kiduloso, Yamim Rabim, Shimonim Maasiom. It's one thing to spend 180 days endlessly pleasuring yourself, vomiting, eating, abusing women, running around like a wild Neanderthal. It's another thing in open display, b'chasar ginas b'san amelech, people to just gawk at you. No shame, no dignity, no integrity. This is what happens to that culture. Culture of indolence, culture of exploitation, culture of deifying wealth, culture trying to display that wealth. And you know what the next stage is, girls? When you've got so much money, and all you want to do is try to flaunt it, and you care about looks and optics and people, well, you know what? You know the next thing you start to flaunt? The female body. And then it goes from being voyeuristic and exhibitionist to being pornographic. And there's one big pornography celebration. That's how you choose a queen. Let's face it. No one's choosing a queen based on her sense of humor or IQ. What is the description? Source number base. Ba'erev hiba. Uva'boker hishava. Al beis hanashim sheni al yad shashka asrutz ha-melech shamer ha-pilakshin. The selection of a queen is the longest pornography fest in the history of mankind. Just taking these little poor girls into a room and seeing which one of them would create the most pleasure for a male. Terrible. Chazal fill in the blanks, the objectification of female bodies. Chazal fill in the blanks about what went on during the Suda that led to Vashti's execution. Why was he calling Vashti? Source number Vav on the second, source number Zayin on the second page. V'chein b'suda social osa harasha. What took place at Achashverosh's drunk party? Halalu omrim. Some would say, Medios knows. The women from Mandai are more beautiful. Halalu omrim. Parsios knows. The Persian women are more attractive. Amar lem Achashverosh. Listen to this vulgarity. Listen to this disgusting, subhuman view of another human being. Amar lem Achashverosh. Kli shani mishdamesh bo. The cup that I drink from. Ina lo Mandai velo Parsi elakasti. Repulsive. That's how you treat another human being, as a kli, as a drink. But that's where this country has sunken into. I said it before, there's value in common culture, there's value in national ethnicity. When it becomes bigoted and exclusionary, then it becomes hostile, but there's deep. And you're witnessing the city of Shushan without any collecting value. So what do people migrate around? Money. Flaunting money, exploitation, objectification, pornography, voyeurism, because it's common language. Visuals. There's this one image that sticks out in my mind. It was a long, long time ago. I've been traveling to the States a lot. I was in the States once. I stayed with my parents and they still lived in America. We didn't have cable TV. So I came home at 11:30 and I said, clear my head, I turn on the TV, turn the channel. Found something on. It was a game show. Game shows are mind-deadening as it is. But get ready for this one. There's a panel of contestants. The game show host would hold up a picture of a celebrity's nose. And these poor people had to try to guess whose nose it was. I shut that program. I am not watching this program. I am not tyrannizing my soul to the stupidity. I have people's body parts and trying to guess whom they are based on the body parts. How low can you sink? How vulgar can you be? And that's the cesspool surrounding these parties. Parties are where these events occur. The voyeurism, the greed, pornography, the vulgar behavior. And Esther provides relief. Esther's the antithesis. Esther's a quiet woman. Doesn't share whom she is. Ein Esther Magedes lo Molata lo Beisavia. Not a self-promotion. No one knows who she is. Chazal says, source number, Ches, the Gemara, Bishar, Sneers, Shaisaba, Berachel, Zachsa, Viyatim, Menu, Shaul, because of Rachel's Sneers, to seed ground to her sister. If like, to me, the most biggest butcher job today is if Sneers is presented solely as how long your shirt is. Sneers is an attitude. It's a deportment. It applies to males and females. It's a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being in the room. Now, the female body is built differently than the male body, and therefore, there's a lot more attention placed on dress. But sneis is not a women's issue. Sneis is a universal issue, and it speaks to dress, but it also speaks to... I've seen a lot of people cover up their whole body and have no clue what sneis is. Just I've seen a lot of people who don't, in my opinion, dress appropriately, but they're a synodic person. Right? When people come to me and say, my daughter isn't dressing tzniyasik, what should I do? And I say, just, is she a tznua person? Ask me if she's a tznua person. Okay, and the dress will come around. Don't make a big deal. Or there has to be personality correction that has to go into it, maybe. But not promoting yourself. You don't want to be seen and attract attention. And same thing with boys. And boys walk around with haircuts that are inappropriate. It's just lack of tznias. Because you're looking for attention. It's really bad psychologically also. You shouldn't need attention. Self-esteem is you're proud of whom you are. You're comfortable with yourself, regardless of anyone else's opinion of you. You're just happy with yourself. It's important to have self-esteem. And this is who Esther is. It's not about clothing. Esther doesn't need perfumes and 6 months here and 6 months there. She'll follow the rules, whatever Haggai tells her. Source number one, the back of the first side. Source number, back of the first side. V'hibayom ha-shlishi, parak A. V'tilbash, Esther. Malchus. Top of the page goes right here. V'tilbash, Esther, Malchus. You see that? Restructuring, she doesn't wear clothing, but she wears clothing. Is that what you see? You see dignity. You see human being. You see royalty. You see Malchus. And finally, Vayihi, Kiros, Hamelech, Es Esther Malka, the end of that section, Omedes Bechatzer. What does he see? Two words. Finally, Nasa Chain Beinav. Not Yofi, Chain. Person, and look at that person, an attractive person. Their eyes, their look, their deportment, their way of speaking, their way of handling themselves. Not a question of how big your nose is, how long your hair is, how big your legs are. It's chayin. Esther's here to debunk and to reject all that body fasts and money fasts and voyeurism. And her parties have a purpose. They're not just parties. There's a purpose to the party. Whether it's to ensnare Haman, whether it's to celebrate life, whether it's to celebrate triumph. And they're just parties for the sake of parties. And there are parties that are maintained in privacy. Take a look at source number A on the back page. Remember when that moment that Esther accuses Haman, and Haman is on the run, being defeated, and Ahasuerus is so angry he runs outside. Then he runs back in and he sees Haman on the bed and he gets even more infuriated and it all falls, goes south. What happens? The Melech Shav, source number hey, Migina Tabisa, he comes from the Gina. El Beis Mishteh Hayayin, returns back to the room where the party was taking place. Of course, he becomes furious when he sees Haman encroaching on his wife. But what do we see? Where are Esther's parties conducted? In a room for no one to watch. There's no voyeurism to Esther's party. All the other parties, Chatzar Ginas Pisan HaMelech. Esther's party, Beis Mishteh Hayayin. In a bar, a little side room. And the king exits to the Chatzar Ginas Pisan, become angry and to let off some steam and comes back in. Privacy, no one wants to watch you. And everything takes place has to be seen by everyone. And of course, when Esther is appointed, everyone's so excited, Hanachala Medina Sasa. She relieves the taxation. Her parties don't come at the cost of other people who suffer. In this whole environment of taxing people for indulgence and hedonism, Esther's the only person saying, you know what, maybe people deserve to put food on their table. Maybe we should relieve the taxes rather than overtaxing them. That's why there are five parties and it's so symmetrical, because the party is the vehicle to convey values or lack of values that are dangerous and, of course, ultimately restorative. The party is just the vehicle, literally, to see these values on display and to see the values being... And that's part of the subsection when Achashverosh is, when the students of Shimon Bar Yochai asked him one day in the Beis Medrash, Rebbe, why were the Jews punished with this looming threat out of nowhere? What was their sin? There's nothing wrong. They didn't do anything terrible. So Shimon Bar Yochai told his students, well, what do you think? And they answered, because they participated in Achashverosh's party. Remember last week we spoke about Israel and how Israel was being struggled over. It's one thing to live in Persia, but it's another thing to be partying while Jews are dying in Israel. Another reason for the party being so criminal, and I said this to you last week, is I can't in my wildest dreams imagine a Jew attending that party. Because the foundation of these parties represent values that are completely antithetical with who we are as Jews. And I don't care how kosher the food is. The food at this party was very, very kosher. Let's take a look at Source 2, Part Gimel. The Gemara in Megillah has a different drasha for Hashtia Chadas. Source 2, Part Gimel, Mai Chadas. Am Reb Chanan, Mishum Reb Meir. Kidas Torah. The food was all kosher, kedus Torah. And Haman ensnared them. How did Haman ensnare them? He took a cup of wine. He told Ahasuerus, "I want to show you how much they dislike you. You see that Jew over there? He put a fly in his cup. He gave it to the Jews. He took the fly out and poured some wine. I kept drinking." I said, "Ahasuerus, now you give the cup of wine to the Jew." Ahasuerus gave the cup of wine to the Jew, and the Jew threw it away. "Can't drink wine that a guy touched." Then you see how bigoted they are? Any wine you touch, you're less than a fly in their minds. What do you see? People are really careful about kashrus at this meal. They drank wine that was kosher, and when Ahasuerus touched it, they tossed it. These weren't people who were eating pork. They weren't eating bacon. They weren't eating crabfish. They were eating kosher food. Just like all the other ethnic dietary rules were accommodated, the Jews were accommodated. Kosher food. It's not just about kosher food. They thank God there's been an explosion in kosher food. You get kosher food anywhere. That can't be your litmus test. If I could go back into 12th grade and make one announcement before our young men and women choose their colleges, it's not about Jewish resources. I hate that word. Because Jewish resources is kosher food and maybe a Shabbos meal. It's about Torah resources. Torah resources are people who are serious about religion, serious about tefillah three times a day, serious about Torah study, serious about halachic observance. That's what you have to find. You can't just spend 4 years of your formative lives in the absence of any religious environment. You can't just have kosher food. You need people to help you become a religious person, to help you continue to grow as a religious person. It's not just the kosher food. You get kosher food anywhere today. I'll ship it anywhere in the world. It's what environments are serious about religion and serious about Avodas Hashem. This is an environment that is completely, completely dissonant with anything a Jew believes in. You shouldn't be involved in it whatsoever. I mentioned before a couple times earlier about casinos and gambling. It's just, you have to be able to make these decisions where you belong, where you don't belong. I don't belong here. Got to get out of here. My neshama is suffering here. Remember, I was in graduate school and we were studying William Blake. William Blake was a late 18th century English poet. Absolutely central to understand Romantic poetry. So we're reading William Blake, and that day we're discussing his illuminated plates. He has plates of art, of illumination, that are associated with the various poems. And these are very, very inappropriate, these plates. I'm sitting there at the class, my graduate school, of course. I always like to joke. This was the first Iraq war. Probably read about it in the history. There was no war that was more universally supported than the first Iraq war. Iraq basically invaded Kuwait in the middle of the night, took all their resources, raped all their women. Basically, the entire world was aligned against Iraq. There was never a war that had such a consensus. There were a couple crazy flower children, hyper-liberals, who were opposed to the war. And they were all in my graduate class. They were all sitting next to me. The typical classic stigma. They're all sitting next to me. I was reading about the plates, and I'm like hiding my eyes, trying to look away, trying to listen to the teacher, closing my eyes. At a certain point, like, the teacher puts this plate right in front of my face. I'm a little bit older, like in 20, my late, early 20s, puts it in my face. I like ran out of this room, ran to the bathroom, started crying, forced myself to puke. I said, "What am I doing here? I'm a yeshiva bachar. What am I doing in the middle of graduate school looking at some vulgar plates that are disgusting?" And then I pulled myself back together and said, okay, I just can't come to this class. I can't look at these plates. But the overall, like, at a certain point, you have to revolt. At some point, you can't just go along and say, okay, and I'll have the kosher food. And at a certain point, there's no place for you there. You're not meant to be at this party. Get up and leave. Get up and walk away. Remember, values are always more important than body. More important than your stomach. Remember, I was once coming home from a long, long, long day of testing. It was 11:30 at night. I'm exhausted, hadn't eaten anything. Put me in a janitor's closet, gave me 15 boys that interview, one after the other. Coming home, I said, I got to eat something. So I stop off at a restaurant in Brooklyn that's still open. And I order my food. I sit down, fast food restaurant. Who's in restaurants at 11:30 at night in Brooklyn? Not exactly Shakespeare and Socrates. People are sitting there, tossing food up in the air, legs on the table, eating. It's like the bar scene out of Star Wars. I mean, it was just completely, completely lacking any dignity. I remember taking my hamburger, taking my french fries I had ordered, tossing it in the garbage and said, I'd rather go home hungry tonight than compromise on my morals and live that type of life. I said, my stomach can't be more important. It's not more important than my values. You got to be sensitive to these things. Because if you don't protect your values, they're going to ebb away. They're going to erode. You get these 10 years of your life, more or less, 17, 18, to about 28, 29, that's when their identity locks in. It's like when the glue dries. For most people, it's when it all dries and they change, you grow, but that's when it all molds. You have to protect yourself. You can't just let these things happen on their own. You have to make stands. And the Jews just couldn't do it. And for that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wake up call. You stand for something. If you don't stand for things, you have no place in this earth. You were chosen not for luxury, you were chosen for responsibility. And you just can't just hang out in this meal 180 days with what's going on. Look around you, you're not part of it anymore. So that's why the parties are so important. So 5 letters, 10 parties. Like Yom Kippur. 5 mikvahs, 10 washing hands. Okay. Have a good Purim, everyone. And enjoy Parsha Zachar. I hope my challahs go for a lot of money. Trust me, they're worth it. They come with instructions. I'll teach you how to make challahs if you come to my house.
Is that part of the deal also?
It's in the wrist. It's in the wrist. All in the wrist. Is it supposed to be this bad weather over Shabbos? Is that what's happening? One now?